Let me begin by telling you where I would like to go and hope that I could bring you along with me in an odyssey that could take as much as 2 years. Now, you may not be able to last for 2 years, but I want to tell you that some 10 or 12 years ago when I did it the first time, we went through, I really don't know why the two of you are here, because so many of you, some of you did go through the first Machzor. There's only one thing I want to caution you. In 10 or so years, I've changed my mind about many things.
But I do.
Let me tell you where I want to go. I'm picking an arbitrary point in a life cycle. And the cycle is nothing more than an endless circle. I probably could start anywhere. I could start at the end, the ultimate, death, and how we view it, what we do, what we don't do, and then start all over. But probably by the end of this cycle, we'll cover the naming of children. Number two, Mila. I will give each of you your own set of instruments, as a moel possesses, and you are going to learn, no matter who you are, how to do a bris. Every single one of you. Mm-hmm. Now, if that is too gory for you, I just want to tell you that the specimen that I have devised does not bleed. It does not. Not at all. What I could not do the last time is give each one of you a little take-home present, because today Miele instruments, instead of costing $500 a set, have begun to be produced, mass-produced, for use across the world surgically by an Israeli company. It's something in the area of about $5. Mm-hmm. A total kit. And you're going to take it home and you're going to learn how to do Miele. You're going to practice. Number three, Pidyon HaBen. Number three. Needless to say, before I go on to number three, before I release scalpels to you, I will give, wherever it is applicable, your husband's butcher cleavers for the entire duration of the time that you possess these scalpels and these instruments. Number three. We'll spend a little time on Pidyon HaBen because it's part of the life cycle. Four, we're going to go to the halachas and our understanding of what bar mitzvah and bat mitzvah truly is. Five, I'd like to speak a little about shidduch, where it came from, how it started, what are the halachas, what are the minhagim of shidduch. Six, the wedding ceremony. Seven, get. I'm going to show you how a get is written. Wilma wanted to be first online at that time.
Seems to write me a get.
Number eight, we're going to touch upon only one aspect of marital living, and that is aside from the actual wedding ceremony itself, and get one aspect of marital life, and that is genetic engineering. I'm going to leave out rearing of children. Okay? All right. And then nine, we'll get on to, are you prepared to die? At which time I will show you a movie. And number 10, we will speak about Avelus, and I will invite some of you to come along with me and perform a tahara on a mannequin, if you should like to. It's a lot of heavy stuff, and so I will let you know in advance where we're going, so that should you choose to go shopping on certain Wednesday nights, you will be able to choose the right ones at which you would like to absent yourself. So, especially when it comes to, the milquetoast ones, Shidduch, Shadchan, those, you know, those easy ones, Pidgin Aben, no, you know, no big deal whatsoever. In other words, though, the Mila situation when it comes to Bris, and when it comes to the ultimate in life at that point, you know, death and dying, that's when I will give you ample opportunity to be able to decide for yourself what you would like to do. Let me begin with a second bit of introductory matter and tell you that we're going to be constantly trying to figure out whether we are in one of five realms. Whatever it is we'll be studying, are we in the area of one halacha, which is the accepted practice? Accepted, but you know that there is machlokas in halacha. Sephardim and Ashkenazim, Germans and Polish, they disagree. I will bring that to your attention and tell you that this is a matter of halacha. Then we have a matter of minhag, conventional custom, which has filtered into halacha because you've done it that way, you raised five children that way, your mother did it that way, she raised children that way, your grandmother did it that way. Halacha and minhag. But your minhag may not be mine. Will your child be brain damaged if you don't do a certain something at its birth? Well, then you'll ask, is it halacha or is it minhag? You understand. There's a third area, and that's Kabbalah, mysticism, for lack of a better terminology. Mysticism is an integral part of our Jewish way of thinking. It tries to unify everything. It's a unified code of reading the universe and all of human experience and the whole cosmic experience. Mysticism runs almost diametrically opposed to what we are, rationalists. We got to see it, you know, tachlis. There's a massive amount of Kabbalah that we're going to have to discuss and see how binding it is. The fourth area is simple mishigas. Mishigas is a degeneration of the insanities that have somehow emotionally and historically creeped up on us. And in the words of Rabbeinu Tam, he calls it minat shtus. You're a fool if you do that. Now, that's going to be an emotionally laden thing, because I'm going to say some things that may offend some of you. But I want to tell you right here and now that I come not to to offend, I come to inform. And I hope you will forget that we call it mishigas, although I'm sure that you remember that we're here to analyze, and if I do say it, you have every single right to say that I am wrong, and you continue your merry way. The fifth area that we have to concern ourselves occasionally with is outside convention, foreign influences, the things that have crept up upon us like mud cakes on to the underside of a car that you're not even aware of. You have to go look underneath your car. You'd see how muddy the residue has caked on, and you're not even aware of it, and you're driving along as if nothing happened. We've come through every civilization, every culture. We've been in touch with every single religion, so to speak, aside from us. Something has had to rub off. Now, it's obvious. It's clear. Take Ashkenazim like us, Western European or Central or Eastern European people, and set down a Jew from Egypt right next to us. Let's see how we go about things. One is going to eat chont and the other one's going to eat moussaka. Okay, we're not even aware of the fact that this is a normal lifestyle. Go tell a Jew from Europe that you can be Jewish without ever having had a teaspoon of chont. So you're crazy. Go tell a Sfardi that chont has been with us probably about 1600 years, maybe a little less. And he'll say, what are you talking about? You tell a Jew of our ilk, pirogin. And this was my litmus test. Pirogin. Everyone knows pirogin. They were made, they weren't frozen for millennia. Okay? I forblunged it. What a pirogin? You Jewish boy? All right, now hold on. I'll show you what the story is. That's next week, Michael. I went ahead and forblunged it right across here into this haven of Poland, little Poland that we have, and little Ukraine that we have right over here across the bridge in Wellington. Come zooming down Patterson Avenue. And I see a big sale, a special on pierogi. Anyone who lived in Europe, meaning Poland or possible the Ukraine, knows that pierogin is not a Jewish dish. Now go explain that to a Sfardi. Or go get an Ashkenazi to understand that when you eat blintzes and pierogin, you are not necessarily Jewish. Not so exactly with gefilte fish, because there may be halachic reasoning that gefilte fish came about, and not so necessarily with kishke, although I'm not entirely sure of that. But we've come through all of these civilizations. We've come through Bavel, and before living in Babylonia at the destruction of the first temple, we didn't have such a thing as I have Yahrzeit on the fifth day of the month of Kislev. The word Kislev didn't exist before we adopted Babylonian names. The word Yahrzeit itself indicates, is a German word, indicates some kind of cultural transference. And when did that come about? So the term is cultural transference. We are Jews. We pride ourselves in our uniqueness. Well, we're going to have to occasionally burst that bubble and indicate to ourselves that there are, in the lifestyle that we have adopted, there are some parallels that have to be drawn that have been osmosed into our existence and transformed into a certain kedusha, into a certain sanctity of time and of untold centuries of practice in some case. Those are your five areas that we're going to have to really delve into. Halacha, that which is binding by Jewish law. Minhag, that which is convention. It's binding on those who have that custom. Kabbalah, let's see what it says. The mystical, non-rational way of looking at things. Mishgas, and we'll be very open about that, non-offensive. Not you and not me. We'll just be very open about it. And then finally, the conventions of the world. Where do we join and where do we separate? Not all of these things will be brought to bear in every single session. But as I look, I've made my master survey in one of the moments of delay that I had. There is no question that this is the axis around which I will completely style our discussions. Then, if there is something in this agenda that you would like to augment or change, if there is something that you would like to put in, I'm always open to stick in whatever is necessary. Some of you may want to know the halachas of dealing with a later teenage daughter. Some of you would like a pre-adolescent child or something along the line over there, and so on and so forth. But that's part of the life cycle, and we'll try to accommodate you wherever possible. Realizing the spectrum of those of you sitting here, I will have to do an immense act of juggling in trying to accommodate all of your needs. You may ask at any time if you don't understand. I will try and tend to be a little above you, not because I want to impress you, but so as to be able to give those of you who have an opportunity to stay up there, to remain up there and to grow. As often as possible, I will give you written documents that you can take home. To some of you, the document that I have for this evening will be tantamount to Chinese. However, if you want to write on it, if you want to go along with it, if you want to hold it because one day you will be able to get into it, then by all means do so. I think some of you are going to have to share the pamphlet in front of you. Is called the Yikore Shemo BeYisrael, may his name be called in Israel, etc. and so forth. It is a pasuk from Rus. It is the first such pamphlet, not the best, but there's nothing else. In trying to accumulate all of the halachic literature on what the minhogim and what the halachas are of naming children, most of what is said is valid. The author himself, in an introduction on your second page, indicates in his introduction, in his hakdama, that he's down in Buenos Aires and he may not have all the books, all the sforim that are necessary to quote here, and he's doing nothing more than presenting an anthology of what goes on. Now, it is true that he didn't have everything, and indeed there are some blaring omissions that have to be seen as nothing more than him not having the sources, and rather not saying that he did a poor job. It does not exist in English. It would be nice to have translated in English, and maybe one day I will write him. It's 10 years since he wrote the original, and maybe I will write this Dr. Oppenheimer in Buenos Aires, I don't know him, and ask him if he's interested in having it translated. It would do nice. It begins with page 11. No, I will translate it into English. Nothing. Absolutely nothing but Haskamos and Tarkin. Mimei Kedem, I'm going to read and translate for those of you who can handle the text. Mimei Kedem, from time immemorial, Koreim Kol Yoshvei Tevel Shemot Liladim Analadim Lahem. People have been giving names to children who were born. Ulam Ta'amei Kriyas Hashem Cholku B'mesh Hadaros. Why we don't give them numbers as opposed to names, we really don't know. How the minhag of coming along and calling someone Dov, Bear, Svi, Deer, Shoshana, Rose, Penina, Pearl, not only in Lashon Kodesh, in Ivrit, in Hebrew, but in all languages, Lion, Leon, Lion, Arye, okay? Okay, good. But we arbitrarily assume that there is a reason, or there must have been a reason, for why we chose proper nouns for these things and common nouns for others. And why all of a sudden, instead of calling it a horse, we call the horse a horse? That's not a name. Okay? It's an appellation. But why you call me by one name and we call you Michael, we really don't know the reason for it. Now, let me stop right here. And let me define the types of names that we generally have. Unfortunately, here's where we have minhag, and here's where we have convention. The fact of the matter is that if you were to ask me, what is that, the halacha, capital T-H-E, of naming a child? I said, probably the number one halacha is, you give a child a Hebrew name. We know exactly what Hebrew means. That's the case if you have a name like, I'm looking around here, Zelda or Bela, you don't have a Hebrew name. If you have a name like Yenta or Zalman, you don't have a Hebrew name. These are not Hebrew names. They tell me, give me a second, they tell me Yenta in Ukrainian is close to the word for butterfly. And as the butterfly hops from petal to petal from, so too a Yenta goes hopping, okay? You were going to say, yes?
Well, it's... So a Yiddish name is that no better than an English name?
Here I come with my first out-of-place whack at what we generally do. If the halacha insists on a Hebrew name, and I believe it does, there is absolutely no kedusha, no sanctity whatsoever to a Yiddish name, any more than Priscilla, Jacqueline, or anything else that you have. Now, if you were to say that, Lily, in a company of Hasidim, they would take me and make me into chaff me. No two ways about it. You know why? Because you have to be reasonable. And here in my first cycle of Jewish life, the first series, I did not feel the way I do today. I'm 10 years down the pike. There is an emotional concomitant here. You name your children, we name our children, for whatever reason, after those who were our forebearers. And if your Bobby was named...
Do we have to?
Do you have to know? But it's an emotional reason.
From what I understand, the trend today is not to.
Okay, we'll get to it. Let me finish my point. Those who tend, and most of us still do that, to give a name after someone, that is a Yiddish expression. Megitta nomen noch emitzen. If you name after your forebearers, if the forebearer's name was a Yiddish name, and he or she was known by that, whether it's Leib, which is Yiddish, and it's the true name is Aryeh in Hebrew, or Koppel, which is a nickname for Yaakov, and I will explain that, how Kop, Ed, comes to Yaakov. There is no question in the world that in today's day and age, and in every day and age, the emotional concomitant says, I want that name. Nonetheless, I have to be quite clear as far as the halacha is concerned. It's called a Hebrew name, and that means with restrictions. There are restrictions on what is Hebrew. Yishmael, the father of the Arab civilization, the son of Avraham, who is a Jew like all others, when used today, is probably a shame Russia as a derogatory name. Korach, the one who saw his bitter self, his bitter end, when the earth shifted and split open in front of him and devoured him, is a Hebrew name. There are no two ways about it. But would you name such a name? Would you name such a person, like a child or a grandchild or your progeny, after such for sure? There are problems. Now, you were going to say.
Do you have to name after a defied one, and does it have to be a relative?
Halacha is no. You look back to Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, and Leah, our four matriarchs, our four mothers. They named after events. Well, we do also. If you name a child Mordechai, the chances are he was born in the month of Purim. If I have an uncle Matisyahu, he was born on Hanukkah. A girl born on and around Purim time is Esther Malka. Esther Malka is a very famous name. And so on down the line. Menachem, which literally in Hebrew means comfort or comforter. You know it was born Tisha B'Av time. That's it. Unless you named after some Menachem. Now, in Chumash, they devised names. The name Yehuda. I will give thanks to Hey, to Hashem, to God. Because I have my fourth son. There you are. Okay? Now, these were contrived names, and in Israel today, they're kind of, they're becoming creative once again.
Mm-hmm. I don't like that.
I didn't ask you to like it or dislike it. You have a right to your opinion. Tell me why, as long as you've got on to the point, tell me why you don't like it.
If you have a chance of naming your child after, a Hebrew name, I don't see where making up these names makes any sense. It's also like Priscilla and John.
Okay. Yeah, so I'm making it up to Claudia to fly with the Hebrew for instance. Yeah. My granddaughter is Kalamit. So what's the difference if you call a rose or an anemone or whatever it is?
But the question, no one is telling you to like it. The question is, what if someone does do it? Are you within the bounds of halacha? And the answer is, I have to say yes. Mm-hmm. Now, you surely don't like it. Now, there's some. I don't know if you remember an instance when I was sitting at the desk at Hillel Academy. I had a visitor in my office, and there was one by the name of Richard Kligman who came to the office to ask me something. He was sent by an official delegation from the class to ask me something, and he asked me if I can go out on the roof and get the ball that was kicked up on the roof, because they know if they went out, bad things would happen to them. The man sitting over there looks at him and says, Nochem Yisrael. That's Richie's Hebrew name. I took care of Richie. I said, how do you know Nochem Yisrael? How do you know Nochem Yisrael? He said, well, I davened with a certain Jew in the Gerish Kibbutz. His name was Nochem Yisrael Vashavia. Do you know that is his great-grandchild, Mokhin Gegem Manom, and they named him after Nochem Yisrael Vashavia? He says, no, I don't know. It's an eerie kind of a feeling. The last time I heard Nochem Yisrael was Vashaviak, old man Vashaviak, sitting in the Gerish Kibbutz in Baripah. I told this to your father, who was breathless, who was speechless. Now, there is coincidence in this world. There is eerie circumstances in this world. But Gival Gishim, look at that.
That's exactly why I...
What are you talking about?
It looked like him now. And you know what? The coincidence is he was named after my grandfather, but his name is Nachum, and he was born Shabbos Nachum. That's what his born into.
Okay. So, though you are blocked in to the lineage of grandfather or whatever and so on and so forth, and it has its advantages as well as its horrible, debilitating disadvantages, how can you pass by the emotional concomitant, this factor, Gewalt geschrieben, I'm named after my grandfather, my aunt, my father's sister, never called me Chaim. Tatanyu, that was her father. I was Tatanyu to her all her 80 some odd years. That's it. How can you pass by this emotional, this thrust? Knew if your grandfather was Elder or Yenta, and nothing else. And nothing else. I don't care what it is. Right? And Shmuel was any better? And Shmuel and Bel. You cannot pass it by. What if it wasn't a Nochum that is a Hebrew name and Israel that is a Hebrew name? But some outlandish name. How would you be able to give it up? Now, I have changed my mind. I am still very brutal about the fact that Yiddish names should be converted to Hebrew names. Wherever possible. Perel is Penina.
Didn't most people have a Hebrew name, or they only had a Yiddish name?
No, a lot of them had both. You had Dov Bear, you had Menachem Mendel, you had,
Yitzchak Isaac. Sure.
They had both.
Yeah. There was a closer connection between the Hebrew and whatever other name was given. But after 1,000 years or more of a European experience, Isaac is as Jewish as anything else. But Isaac is as Greek and Latin as I-S-A-A-C. And there ain't no Kedusha in that Latin word, Isaac. It just isn't. And then, Rabbi Soloveitchik, Bizumot and Sons, his name is Yosef Dov, he's named after his great-grandfather. But his great-grandfather was called Yoshe Ber. Yoshe was the Lithuanian way of pronouncing Yosef. Yoshef. So it became Yoshe, with the F drop. And Ber is the German Yiddish translation for Dov, which is a bear, B-E-A-R. No? Go name a child today Ber, and tell him that in English it's B-E-A-R. Okay? Bear Borowski. Go do that. You see? But a parent or a grandparent or an aunt or an uncle will swear his name is Bear. You know why? Because he was always called Bear. But his true name was Dov. So we come now to a first understanding of categories of halacha. The true name, the legal name, and the assumed name, the names that he was called. Not when he was called the name, you better get out from under my feet or I'll kill you. He was called, it's called Shem Arisa, the name in the cradle, you were saying.
If you don't have a Hebrew name, and let's say you're an adult, and you just take on a Hebrew name, does there have to be a ceremony? Or?
Nope.
Just take on
Simple as that.
If you don't have a Hebrew name, what if you have a Yiddish name?
Yeah, but it's by Nika Suba.
Oh.
But I only have a Jewish name.
That's all I have.
Well, that's what it says. I'm going to change my name.
Okay.
But some people still say,
because that's the question, because nobody ever knew me as my Yiddish name.
And that's the name.
Nobody knows me as from a Markle.
She's still called Susan. Joey Fred. You know.
Okay.
She's called by Hebrew name.
No, she made up the name Shoshana, but that's
not
her name.
Hold on, one at a time.
And it's on her Kasuba.
Who's that?
Susan Case.
Mm-hmm. What is her Hebrew name?
Shangle.
You know how to make up a name?
And she decided when she went to high school she's going to do Shoshana.
Here, you see, hold on, one at a time. Here, she's in a gray area. A ksuba is a legal document. And before you get to a legal document, you can make certain assumptions. You assume that you were named this way. What happens if the guy who was making the Mishaberach, naming the child, whether it is the girl or the boy, made a mistake? Is that irreparable damage? Or can it change? It's one of the things that we will learn as in the ensuing moments and later on in another session. The fact of the matter is that if the father or the parents intended, because it's not only the father's choice, if the parents intended that the name be X and the guy who announced it announced Y, then forget about it, it's X and that's it, it's what you were called. So you can assume a name, there's no question about that. If before the ksuba we're in a gray area, no question about that either, but at least you can empathize with it. I want to be called by a Hebrew name. Once we are dealing after the ksuba where we have legal documents that we have to worry about, we're in trouble. There are three stopgaps, three points in life, toll gates when we're in trouble with names. One is the ksuba, the night of the wedding, and that is why I insist 6 to 8 months before the wedding that a chassan and kala tell me what their Hebrew names are and we work it out and we check it. Second is a get, the divorce, and third is when the ultimate occurs and we have to engrave a monument. Those are the three troublesome moments. And I counsel people at every stage of the game, let's get the names straight. Let's see what they really are. There was one get that I had recently. that the gal was a Passaic gal, married by a Passaic rabbi, ready to get a divorce. From the time the information started with her mother to what they gave to the rabbi, and he wrote into the ksuba, to the time of the get that I did research, there was no way of truly establishing her name. You know what we had to do? We had to forget it all and use her English name. This woman who is called Sandra. Wipe it all off. Her mother says one thing. Well, if you said it, mother, were you at your daughter's wedding? Why didn't you tell Rabbi X? Call Rabbi X, he's here. I speak to him every week, 2-3 times a week. He said, what do your records show? Said, my records show exactly what they told me. And then I have to go arrange a getting and go tell them what the name is. But it's a rough one. It's truly a rough one. So there is the legal name, and then there are the assumed names, and then there are nicknames. Sometimes you know nothing more but, or nothing more than a nickname. And you swear that this is the name. Do you know how many times people have come to either a wedding or time a funeral to make a Kelman and Rachman? What's the deceased's name, or what's the principal's name? Chuchi. Chuchi, my Uncle Al's brother. My Uncle Al's brother, Chuchi. But Al, what was his name? Al was not fortunate to have sat all his years and be able to learn Torah. Nicest guy in the world, but doesn't know an Aleph from a Beis, my uncle. The finest human being that walks the face of the earth, of the world. Bobby said it was Chuchi. Mama said it was Chuchi. It's a Hebrew name. What's there to talk about? Finish. And that's it. He doesn't know what to put on the monument. He doesn't. I mean, Chuchi. Finish. That's his Hebrew name. Go. Legal name. Assumed names. Given names. The names that people call you and nicknames, which is even below. You were saying.
But are you allowed to just make up a name to put on
the
ksuba, that's not your real name?
Iffy. Very iffy. But you can go along with it.
I've known cases with doing a get, they would either had to go back and the whole thing had to get ripped because they had both the wrong name on it.
That's correct.
They even, you know, and if you spell it wrong, it also is a...
That's correct.
Couplet. So what about just making up a Hebrew name that's not... Could you like it better just to...
I hear what you're saying.
I mean, you know.
Okay? But it's no different. It's no different than an assumed name. Correct?
Right.
You can assume a Hebrew name if you want. There you are. Yes.
Why is modified?
There is a question over here. There is a question over here that we will get to. And it's category 5, cultural influences. The word Moshe is in Chumash. The word Mordechai is in the third part, Ksuvim, in Megillas Esther, in Tanakh. We assume that anything and everything that's in Chumash or in Tanakh is a Hebrew name, and it's not true. Mordechai, well, you're not going to name anyone Parah, okay? Except for one thing, that Mordechai was a member of the Sanhedrin of the Anshe Knesset HaGedolah. Moshe Rabbeinu was Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe is directly a derivative of an Egyptian word, which is a cognate language. Mordechai is a Persian word that was shared by none other than one of the Persian gods, Marduk. It's the same root, but nonetheless Mordechai assumed the name, and here we go. In time we sanctified it. It is no less sanctified than today's date in Kislev. And Kislev is a Babylonian word. And Tishrei and Cheshvan and Teves and Shvat and Adar and Nisan are all Babylonian words. And in time we sanctified it. It withstood the test of time, and we allowed it to be. In the times of the Gemara in Babel, there were dozens, the Amoraim, dozens of Amoraim who didn't have Hebrew names. They used Aramaic names. Rababo, that's not a Hebrew name. This was Aramaic, and Aramaic is the equivalent of Yiddish in those days, or the English of today. It's the spoken language of the society. Ultimately, wasn't that. So, we have those exceptions. There's no question about it.
You know, we're talking about names, and one of the things that comes up is why we named... Only Ashkenazic Jews named after people, or in a sense, or only one of the people who name after people who are deceased. Svardim, name them after people who are still alive.
Mm-hmm.
Just like a lot of the guys. John Jr., but your father's name is Moshe, so you're Moshe.
And an Ashkenazi, if God forbid you would do that, would go berserk.
Yeah.
You would swear that you, by naming your child after a living relative, are killing the relative.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Chas v'shalom, the relative, and what Rebbe won't tell you that you were a murderer. You've got blood on your hands.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Even if you have the person's permission.
But did you hear that from
we had that from my sister's.
My grandmother, very much Ashkenazic, very Leah's grandmother, I'm sorry, very much Ashkenazic, very much Russian, a brutal, cold-hearted rationalist. No Mishigasin in that woman's life. Tachlis was able to see two children get on their feet. The two children had their children, and she has a whole generation of grandchildren, and she put a down payment for every single one of them on a house, and we're still living to see great-grandchildren, and now great-great-grandchildren being born. One point in her life, after she lost her husband, and after she lost her son, she started to divest herself of everything. She retired after 31 years as a grocery woman, up at 4 o'clock every morning, and she started to give away everything. And Medicare came in, start giving away your money so that you can qualify for Medicare. She truly gave it away. Persian lamb coat, she gave away. Her diamond ring, her engagement ring, wedding ring, gave away. She was getting on in years, and she decided that she wants to live to see a name given for her. And that's sacrilege in Ashkenazic circles. Bobby is Dina. All 94 or 95 years of her. Bobby is Dina. And she cornered Leah, my wife, and she said, I want a girl to give my name. It was a dilemma. And that is how I got the name for my daughter, Adina, which is another name, but had enough of a sound to satisfy her that in her life she was named. Simple as that. Anenikol, Anikol, Adain, and Dina has Adina. Simple as that, and she was satisfied. Okay? Now, Adina was, Adina is now 13, so therefore Bobby had to be at that time a young 80 years old. Maybe 81.
She's not that
old.
Okay? Simple as that. So she's lived her contract and outlived it by maybe 10 years or more, and she's been outliving them all. Okay? Yeah, degenerating here and there, no longer lucid, but that's what she wanted. No. How do you go... Now look at this reverse role. How do you go ahead and deny a woman that emotional desire in life? Okay? I want it now. I want to live to see that I have a namesake. How do you do it? Okay? It was easy. It was truly easy in my case, because Adina was a name that Leah did like. It was on the list of names that she would have chosen. And it was close enough. It was truly close enough. Her middle name has an interesting and paradoxically different story. My father had several sisters who perished in the Holocaust. When he left as a young child, and his mother and father left after World War I to come to America, those children remained, they wanted to stay, and we never knew what happened to them thereafter. One of those children, one of those sisters, siblings, had a very, very much Yiddish name. And in those years, 13 years ago, I was a wild maniac. I knew what was right, and I don't care about anyone or anything. Yikov Adin HaSahar, this is the way it's going to be. And my father very quietly proposed something like Yente Falken, something like it. Leah was more tame than I was, or shall I say, he had more confidence in being able to get to first base with Leah than he had with his oldest son, the rabbi. And so he approached her, and they quickly struck a deal. Out of the clear blue sky, a batya was invented. And my father was smart enough to say, I'll buy it. I have my needs. That's a name after my sister. You have your needs. It's not a Yiddish name. And that is the way Adina Batya was invented. Simple as that. So we're dealing in that realm of emotion that is incredible. Which brings me, give me one word, which brings me for anyone and decide to create some kind of dissension and machlokas in the naming of the baby. It is for this reason that there is a hierarchy, if you don't know it, al pi minhag, and that minhag has the substance of halacha. When it comes to naming children, it is the mother's choice for numbers 1, 3, and 5. It is the father's choice for numbers 2, 4, and 6. If you did the opposite, Fagi, if you went the opposite, you haven't violated any halacha. But the important, Fagi, the important part is that the brilliance of experience has been that you know when two children cannot play b'sholem peacefully, you give the toy to one from 3 to 4, and then the toy goes at 4 o'clock till 5 to the other. Let's alternate, and simple as that. Woe unto the grandparent who sticks his or her nose in when it is not his or her business. Woe unto such a grandparent. However, and I'm not talking out of two sides of my mouth, if we've already established in the first part of our session tonight that we are dealing in gut issues and emotional issues, how can you not open up your head, you young whippersnapper, you pisher? I diapered you? Me. I was diapered. You were sick, so I stayed up. You had a bloody nose, I cleaned it up, etc. and so forth. And it's your own grandfather you don't want to give a name to. My father, your own grandfather. Okay? Unfortunately, the birth of children comes at too early an age of parents. It usually comes in their 20s. In their 20s, they haven't even begun to solve their own problems. They are still worried about themselves and themselves only. They should worry about a mother. They are first breaking away from mama and papa. And for some, it takes 40 years to break away. And at age 20, at 25, I should consider the feelings of my father at 45 and 55 and 60? What does he know? He's a meddling fool. And so again, that incredible paradox of emotion comes to bear on this. And if we have to decide the fight some which way, tis I, the judge, who will come to a grandparent and say, or to a parent who has to be rescued from an in-law or a parent, and say, that's the law. You don't like it, tough luck on you. Oy vavoy, woe unto you that you create this kimpeton, this woman who just gave birth, you create all kinds of problems. Or this father who now has to hopefully stay up at night at 2 o'clock in the morning and worry about that child. All right, yeah, they were on formula. They weren't nursing that one. Okay, so he got up for the 2 o'clock feeding. Okay, occasionally there's one. Michael, you were next. You were saying.
He's getting up at 2 o'clock this morning.
He heard this from the first night she came home to hospital. And the last time he ever heard her.
Michael, you're next.
He woke me up the first time. That was it.
Your appeal to emotionalism, or you're putting emotionalism into this whole naming process, and bringing in the foreign influences, the German, the Hungarian, the Babylonians, or whatever, is so utterly abhorrent to me. And I can give you reason for it. I look at this European situation. I look at how you talk about Hungary and Poland, laughingly about others' relationship to Hungary and Poland, and excuse any Europeans here. I, Baruch Hashem, or unfortunately, depending upon how you look at it, was born of relatively Americanized parents, one of them purely American and one basically American by the time I got to her. And to me, this tie with Europe, with these pagan Christian Nazis and communists and all that, is nothing. It's a thing I'd like to get away from rather than come to. Babylonian, the superstitions, the junk that has come into our Gemara, the fact that I can't walk with three people or with two people, I can walk, or whichever way it goes, because there might be an evil eye watching. Comparing it to the Yerushalmi, which doesn't have similar thing, I don't know if I had that part. This whole thing of superstitions, and let's get rid of it. Let's do what my Christian friend in the office does. Go have a restoration movement. Go back to our beginnings, our Lashon HaKodesh. Like, you didn't like Yehuda Lei. You wanted Yehuda for a name. Good, stick with it. What are you changing your mind for? Other things I'd like you to give in on. Not on that.
I'll tell you why I've mellowed in time. I was an opinionated whippersnapper when I first met you. And for the last 15 years, I've seen what has happened to you. And I see that I was wrong in taking you down the road of cold rationalism. Simple as that. I denied you some things. Then again, if you don't like that answer, I'll tell you a second thing. Do you know of any system that is perfect? Any computer language that's perfect? Any program that's perfect? Perfect. That solves all the problems? Well, let me tell you something. The way we implement halacha is not perfect. But one day there's going to come a person like you and say, hey, Rabbi, you have an imperfect system over here. So all this kedusha that you are ascribing to halacha and your Jewish way of life is bunk. Because look at this superstition, and look at this nonsense, and look at this inaccuracy, look at this gap in the continuum, in the chain of tradition, and so on and so forth. Look at these influences from Bovel, and from Poras, and Yovan, and Modai, and so on. It's worthless. Let's look for another way. And let me tell you something. It's going to be very difficult to convince the person that maybe 98% of what we do is Torah Hashem Tumimos, Meshivas Nofesh, is the pure and the holy and the unadulterated inspiration of HaKadosh Baruch Hu throughout the ages. And occasionally we have a little Mishigas. We're entitled to a little Mishigas. But how's about worrying about that which is not Mishigas and that which is sanctified, and we'll leave it be. Every time you eat a walnut, you complain to the Rabbeinu Shlomo that it has an ugly nut. Every time you eat a coconut and get into the inside, the sweet inside, you worry about the ugly wrapping in which it's in? Or do you worry about the essence? Last time you ate a pomegranate, if you liked it, or an orange, or a grapefruit, or a watermelon, you worried about the ugly green rind? Well, you're worried about what was inside. Now, the watermelon is not entirely watermelon. It's got an ugly outside. An irrelevant, a disposable and dispensable outside. But on a cold day, you wanted that watermelon. Oh, but I say, good. Did you worry about the pits? You didn't worry about the pits. You were able to overcome it. You lived with the pits. And you spit them out in a very...
The pits were there before. You're adding it. I go over, turn on a radio in the morning on my late... I was late to work today. So I turn on the radio and they had the atomic shear. And he's doing it in Yiddish.
He's doing it every
morning, I know. Right. Why in the world does he have to do it in Yiddish?
So she can understand it in the car and you can yet learn the language.
Who wants to?
You don't, others do. That's the point.
And today
there isn't English? Why was an art scroll invented? You see, if we went ahead and completely disregarded your needs, that's one thing. There's a telephone over there. There's a telephone over there. Okay?
4732.
If you were to disregard your needs, that's one thing. But we don't disregard your needs. We go ahead and we invent an art scroll. And we talk in English. But the German who came from Germany is entitled to hear his language. The Polak is entitled to hear her language, in this case Yiddish. Because how is there going to be a meeting of minds and hearts unless there is a certain kind of confluence of familiarity, of togetherness?
Well,
how do you know?
Most of the people who've done that.
Why do I have to, because of your cold insanities and your particular circumstance, erase, ignore, neglect, and disregard 1,000 years of culture? You don't have enough cells in your body to be able to go ahead and conjure up the number of tears that flowed in rivers because when a Yiddish word was heard, when a Yiddish song was sung. And the Arab is any different, so to speak, to quote the Jewish Arab. What, Ladino?
Okay, very good.
Which is nothing more than a jargon of Spanish? How can I go ahead and disregard it?
Because you got no Yiddish.
Okay, well, this is it. Okay. And in America, and also, you're American. If you lived in another country, you wouldn't rest for a moment unless and until your English, your child spoke your language, your native tongue, your English. Why are you blaming Yiddish?
Because it's born here.
Okay.
This far.
Okay.
I
said to someone today, he asked me in the car, and that's why I was late tonight, did you see this week's Allgemeine Journal? Because he's looking for an ad, he's looking for something that should have been in there. I said, I don't see it until Friday night. My son buys it and reads it. You know, you remember what I did with my father 30 some odd years ago when I was a teenager, 14, 15. I told him, you better start learning how to read Hebrew well, because in 10 years you won't have a Yiddish newspaper. At that time there was the Tog, there was the Morgen Journal, and there was the Forward, those were three, and then Freiheit, which was the communist Yiddish newspaper, and a couple of other periodicals, and he used to buy them all. I used to go get it for him. And he looked at me and he smiled and finished. His grandson is reading Yiddish. These are gut issues, these are emotional issues that we can't divorce ourselves from. But I don't cut you out either. You, the cold rationalist, has to understand. If you will deem something to be mishigas, insanity, or if you will deem something to be a foreign influence and totally irrelevant to your Jewish experience, the only thing I ask you is ask a shaila to make sure that your observations and what you check into is correct. That's all. What you get your claws into, just make sure that it's correct, that your perception is correct. And if we'll do that, we'll be able to exist. Can we learn a little more on page 11, the third paragraph? Lochein anachnu b'nei Yisrael. We started out by saying we really don't know what the reasons were for civilization giving names to people. But we, Lochein anachnu b'nei Yisrael, we Jews are entirely different. How chim b'derech Hashem, walking in the ways of God, v'ochazim ma'aseh avoseinu b'yadeinu, and have such a passion for continuum, for tradition, that which our forefathers did. יש לנו הרבה טעמים המביאים על סנו לקרוא שילדנו באחד השמות. We have several reasons that motivate us to name a child one way or another. Because אינו שם לילד, when we take a child and name him or her, מביאים לידי ביטוי את השקפותינו ומחשבותינו בכלל. All of our orientation as a people, all of our emotions and thoughts of a people come to the fore.